This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Hey, Gordon, welcome this week. How's it going?
It's going well, Doc. I believe I finally got you to watch a game of football last night.
Can you believe it, eh? Gordon, I mean, you guys, I told you last time, I mean, I'm a huge fan. I'm more of a sort of rugby cricket fan, but I have been watching a little bit. And I see today you've even come into studio in an Arsenal shirt. I can't believe this.
Well, we're playing tonight, later on tonight. So yeah, I'm getting in the spirit of it. But you know, this is a double show, and you'll know from the intro to our show, we don't take jokes about Arsenal, and we don't take jokes about the Sharks either, because that's my other side. So
exactly,
that's the good news for the day.
It's a double hitter, and I mean, yeah, big welcome to our first guest of the year, Dr. Eduard Kutsia. Ed is CEO, Gordon, as you know, and many of our listeners will know, CEO of the Sharks. And the big news this week has been, you know, the signing of a really attractive deal with an American investment house, taking, I guess, South African sport to that next level of professionalism. Just before we introduce and welcome Ed on the show, just a little bit of his background. I mean, Ed is a guy who played, he was at school at Afis and played for the Bulls in his junior years, played SA under 19 and SA under 21, then played a few seasons at the Sharks, and then made his move to France and played many years in the Basque country in Biarritz. So again, Ed and I know each other well from our previous corporate job where we were the headline sponsor of the Sharks. Ed, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Doug. Yeah, thanks for having me. It's lovely to be on the show as always, to share some insights and, you know, to get your views on things, because I know you guys have got a wealth of knowledge. So yeah, I'm excited to be here, and thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ed. And I mean, just before we get into the big topic, which is the money and the razzmatazz of America, I think, Ed, it's fair to say that last year you were in the press for very positive reasons around your doctoral thesis. You know, Ed became a doctor and he did his work, Gordon, around transformation and the We See Color. Ed, if you want to maybe just let's lead in with that, a little bit of the forward-thinking nature and the work that you guys did in terms of sensitizing and talking about some topics that are possibly quite difficult for a lot of South Africans, and how that played into the team and the performance. And then obviously we'll get into the main topic of today, which is why you're in the news this year around the American deal.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. I mean, it's transformation is one of those topics. As soon as you start looking down, you know, they pick their phones up, some folks go to the toilet, you know, no one really wants to talk about it, because, you know, I think transformation in our space in South Africa has always been seen as a punitive thing, you know. It's always been seen as something that either takes away from one group or gives unfairly to another one, you know. And I think for us at the Sharks, you know, we wanted to change that narrative around transformation. I think we wanted to change the way people perceive it. And, you know, and that ties in with IC Color. So IC Color is not a political drive. It's not a race thing. It like anything in South Africa, it speaks about diversity and inclusivity. And, you know, our culture at the Sharks is inclusivity underpinned by diversity. And, you know, this whole thing started when with my own insecurities. You know, like I'm not ashamed to admit that growing up as a boy, I also looked at transformation as a punitive thing. And, you know, I left the country. As you said, I went to France because I felt I had a very limited opportunities here. You know, but the lure of Africa and South Africa brought me back. And you know, like I moved back here with my wife and our three kids after 8-9 years in France, being naturalized in France, you know, like having a life there because I wanted to be part of this. I wanted to be part of the solution. But I needed to understand more about what it is and where it originated and how to go forward. You know, I think we can lose a lot of space treading time treading water, and I started studying. You know, my background is I did accounting, then I did my honors in financial planning, and I wanted to do a master's degree MBA because that's pretty much what you do. It's the next step in the ladder. Sorry, my Afrikaans roots came through there. And I went to the chairman of the board, the Sharks board, and I said to them, would the Sharks pay for my further study? He says, "Yo, cool, what do you want to study?" And I said, "No, I wanted to do this EMBA at UCT." And he says, "Ed, you're already a robot. Go find something that'll change the way you think." And I found an MPhil in inclusive innovation. And, you know, I decided to do to base my research around inclusivity in sport and how to build an inclusive business model for rugby that's profitable and sustainable. And at the end of that study, I realized that, you know, I've only just but scratched the surface here. And then I continued my study into a PhD at UKZN aimed at inclusivity and diversity in sports. And I took rugby, cricket and soccer, and I first determined what an inclusive sport is in the South African in the South African context. And then unpacked exactly, you know, what the history of each sport is, spectator demographics, player demographic, and, you know, like built a model around that. Why such a long-winded story, we actually come to I See Colour is, you know, I believe we should see colour in South Africa. You know, I'm Afrikaans. I was born in Bloemfontein. My wife's English. Her heritage is Irish and English. Mm. You know, we're in a diverse community. We can't say that we don't see colour. And, you know, and at the Sharks, it started, I said, guys, instead of putting our heads in the sand, why don't we just see the color? We see the story in everyone. We celebrate it. We acknowledge it. We sympathize to the history of each one. You know, we don't compromise who we are.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this environment, the rules of engagement with the Sharks determine that we've got to treat each other a certain way. And you know, within that space, we need to make sure that we celebrate each other's diversity. And only through that, we'll achieve full inclusivity. And yeah, Doug, I don't know if I answered your question, but that's pretty much a little bit of my history and I See Colour in a very short summary.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Ed. And I think that was, you know, I want to use the word brave, but I think it's a bit cliche and a bit overtraded. It's just a good commonsensical approach to commercial leadership. And I think, and we'll chat about that now. I'm going to hand over to Gordon to talk a little bit about the deal. But I mean, what I guess South African franchises need and South African administrators need is a good level-headed approach to commerce as well. And I mean, through my career, having worked with many of the different sporting codes, a lot of the guys are great guys, but they're more fans, in my opinion, fans of the game than they are business people. And I think now I'm going to hand over to Gordon to talk a little bit about the American way, which I think is going to be certainly, and again, my experience in dealing with some of the Americans, a mesh-up of business and big sport.
Yeah, look, I mean, there's so many points that have been raised there. I mean, I think for me, just looping back a bit, why I've always enjoyed, you know, the Sharks in recent years is that the issue of transformation was linked to a kind of a, what I perceive anyway to be a bottom-up approach. So Sharks Academy, you're including people from the ground floor and building them up at school level and wherever the case might be. And I think that for me was a real innovation. And again, bringing it back to my other love, Arsenal, you know, you've got a youth academy in Arsenal. It's one of the reasons we've got one of the youngest sides. Yeah, we're not playing well, but we've got a great side and we've got a great future. So I think for me that's an outstanding aspect of transformation. Is if you make it bottom up, it's when transformation is imposed top down, I think that we get uncomfortable with it. But Doc, that's not you, Doc, the other Doc. Two Docs, and I might use the Afrikaans word for where that starts with a D. the demographics of the game. For me, the other thing about the Sharks is, I mean, I went there, I watched my first game of rugby at the age of 5 with my dad. Mm. Went there, took my kids there, played my rugby there. You know, Kings Park for me was a home. And I think that's been an aspect of the game. So coming back to you, Ed, I mean, how do you balance what I perceive to be the American way, which is bottom line, win at all costs, versus that unique kind of aspect of Sharks rugby? It's a family event. What always has been on the outfields, Kings Park. We've tried variously to name it after the sponsors. I shall go to my grave calling it Kings Park. But how are you going to balance the bottom line with the family kind of aspect of it?
Yes, thanks, Gordon. I think it's a good question. And, you know, I feel that you touched on it briefly about a bottom-up approach. And I think a bottom-up approach just establishes and underlines your culture. You know, and I think one of our culture at the Sharks is, I believe, what's attracted these American investors. You know, if you look at Marco Mazzotti, his team that he grew up with was the Sharks. You know, he lived in Durban in a Manzi Mtoti. You know, he played his, you know, schoolboy rugby in a Manzi Mtoti. You know, he grew up with the Sharks. So he's got an affinity to the Sharks. So he knows what the Sharks culture is about, you know. And I think when you buy into something, you also buy into, obviously there's commercials, but you also buy into the culture and the history and the story of a franchise, you know. And I think from what our discussions have been with them is they don't want to fundamentally change the Sharks culture. They actually quite like that. They respect it and they want to build on it rather than break it down. So, you know, but the American way is big, bold and brave. And I think that also resonates with the Sharks, you know. And it goes back to Brian Fonseca's days when he took it from the Banana Boys to the Sharks. And now it's just the norm. But there must have been kickback then, you know. So, like, I think people, anywhere where there's change, I think there'll be some questions around it. But I think the way you approach these things, if you approach it with transparency and integrity and respect, I think that there's a lot of understanding, you know. I think a lot of our fans realize that we were at a crossroads where we needed to make a decision. And I do believe we've got the best potential fit for the Sharks going forward.
Yeah, you're talking about the Banana Boys. That phase, of course, pre-game entertainment for those of my age will remember, consisted of a wonderful old guy, part of Natal rugby folklore, Marnie Blom, who used to run on the game, you know, on the field before the game kicked off with a banana tree and run up and down and then score under the poles with his banana tree. And that was it. It was considered to be enormous entertainment at the time. So I'm quite keen to see how you planning to roll out the entertainment aspect of it. And also one of the controversial things, Ed, which, you know, really I think damaged the bums and seats at Kings Park was the closure of the outer fields for a while, because that's also been part of Sharks folklore. What are the plans for, you know, brying on the outer fields and just generally, you know, in making it a day out, which I think was always what the Sharks offered, was a good day out?
Yeah, Gordon, I think that, I mean, that definitely slowed things down. It paused it for a while. But, you know, since Gary Tashman's tenure here, we managed to resurrect that relationship with the city. You know, the liquor license got returned and reinstated on the outer field. So there's the vibes back again. You know, you can bra and you can have a drink on the outer fields. You know, we obviously control it from a security and a safety point of view. But that is definitely slowly but surely restoring itself. And I think we could see it towards the end of 2019 and the start of 2020 before COVID hit. You know, like, there was a really positive vibe around the stadium. You know, the in-stadium experiences we've and it's actually quite a funny story, because I think our board always, when I say, listen, I've got an idea, I think some of them like shrivel around their teeth, because about 3 years ago I said to them, listen, I've got an idea, why don't we build a beach club with a pool and a beach on the one side? And they're like, are you crazy? And then they eventually, you can do it, but you're not allowed to spend any Sharks money. So I said, no, it's not a problem. And we got sponsors and partnerships, and we built probably and Kingston Beach Club trends as the most popular destination, a nightclub destination in Durban. And then end of 2019, I said, okay, well, now on the kids' side, let's build a two super tubes, another pool, another beach, you know, a kids coffee shop, esports gaming lounge, and a creche for match days.
And someone said to you, but Ed, we actually play rugby at this franchise.
Yeah. So, and they again said, oh, it's cool, do it, but you're not allowed to spend any Sharks money. So first game back, we had two super tubes, esports lounge, creche, beach, another pool. And, you know, that's today the small zone. So we can't wait for crowds to come back to experience those things, you know, because that is the Sharks culture. You know, it's like this family environment in the stadium, on the outer field, in a safe space that really caters for all demographics, all generations and all genders.
That's great. And Ed, just for listeners who perhaps don't know, you mentioned the small zone. Can you talk about you guys naming that after James Small in memory of his contribution to the game?
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yes, Doug. No, I mean, James is one of the favorite Sharks boys. You know, I think he did finish his career at Western Province, but we see that as more of a CSR effort that he went to. So we never really held that against him. But, you know, James was an unbelievable person. I think he was a good friend to many of us here. And he had this vision of, you know, a family area in the stadium. You know, so like him and I had countless like meetings and coffees around, you know, what should it look like? And, you know, he unfortunately passed away just as this was becoming a reality. So we decided it fit to name that area after him, you know, to leave a legacy to him and his vision. And yeah, he's missed, but hopefully through the small zone, when fans come back, you know, like there's a little bit of James Small that will continue to live in our stadium.
Yeah, and that's great. And again, you know, just looking and listening to you, Ed, I think it speaks volumes, Gordon, in terms of not just looking to tomorrow, but also looking a little bit back at the respect and the culture of the Sharks franchise, saying thank you to the players who played, and not just the players, but also the fans, and then building the next generation. I think that's always been attractive. You know, certainly when I worked very closely with Ed, when you were the commercial head, and Smitty was CEO, and later on Gary, you know, we tried and we did a lot of good work around building stuff on field and off field. And I made the point, you know, Gordon, there's nothing worse in my opinion than a sponsor who tries to get too clever on field when, you know, you're not the rugby guy. So we did a lot of work with the off field stuff, and I'm glad to see that continuing. And I guess, Ed, we'll talk a little bit about the investment now. But, I mean, the investors have come with a big pedigree. You know, guys that own in the NBA, the Milwaukee Bucks, on the hockey side, the Florida Panthers. So I can only imagine they're going to bring some of that thinking and that entertainment and razzmatazz to the park as well.
Yeah, Doug, and then don't forget the Rock Nation guys.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll get on, Ed, I got a note here. We'll get on to that a little bit later, because there's the whole big issue there around Rock Nation and its star player. But that I'm going to leave Gordon to ask that question later. So,
yeah, look, I mean, you know, your challenges, you know, I should put you in touch with Arsene Wenger. He also wasn't allowed to spend any money. But just coming back to the Western Province side of things, which will then lead us into Rock Nation discussion. It's interesting, that dynamic, because my earliest recollections of Kings Park as a little boy were sitting with my dad, and he would just spend the entire game when we played Western Province hurling abuse at Janie Engelbrecht. I have no idea to this day what Janie Engelbrecht ever did to my father, but it led me to conclude that Western Province was not the team I should be supporting. But, yeah, look, I mean, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Yeah. I mean, obviously, the limitations and what we can talk about, but the papers, my old rugby club, Morris Rovers chat group on WhatsApp is agog with discussion about Sia Kolisi, and does the deal include him? Will we be seeing him running onto a Sharks field, which I think would excite just about every Sharks fan that I know.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the question is.
The question is, is he going to be running on a Sharks jersey, Sia? Do we have to wait until the next episode for that one?
Now, listen, yeah, I've also picked up a lot of the talk in the press and stuff like that. You know, he forms part of the Rock Nation stable. So there's obviously, you know, people draw those lines and they do make the connection. But, you know, like what I really enjoy from the consortium we brought into the Sharks is, you know, they want to empower us to continue to do what we're doing. you know, they won't put any ultimatums to us. They obviously like have very good relationships and contacts. And, you know, like after, and I actually had a discussion with our team about this, because I mean, when any contracted rugby player sees a big change like we've had in our organization, you know, there's a lot of insecurity and anxiety that comes in. So I had a chat to them and said, listen, guys, normally after every competition, we sit down, we do an audit, we looked at what, where we lacked, where we need, you know, and then we have those discussions around it, you know. So at the end of Currie Cup, we'll put all our cards on the table and see where we came short in the competition, where we need, maybe if it's from a leadership point of view, you know, maybe in the tight five, you know, maybe depth in certain positions. So, and then we'll see what's in the market and contract accordingly. So at the moment, it there's a lot of rumors around. There's nothing concrete. But, you know, like Siya Kolisi is the World Cup winning captain. So it's just an honor for us that, you know, people would link a brand like him to a brand like us, you know. But at the end of the day, anyone that comes to the Sharks as a record player, they've got to perform on the field, you know. And I think that's where his value ultimately lies.
Yeah, and I think you've made that point, Ed, in previous press releases that we've read about, you know, I guess a player has to earn his right and play, and then within the structure, and we've read about co-captain possibilities and so on. I don't want to get in much more on the uncertainties. Let's rather deal with some of the certainties. Now, MVM Holdings have come in, they've put in X amount of money, that speculated, it's irrelevant how much it was, they've bought 51% of the franchise, and I mean, you guys took a very different stance, and again, I don't want to go and compare you to Western Province, that's their prerogative. They took a view and you guys took another view. And I can only wish you guys all the best going forward. Now, I guess one of the big things that comes out of that is the Rainbow Cup that you guys are steering at now. So are the guys excited about that? They're looking forward to a new competition?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's been a lot of disruption and change in rugby and in the international rugby landscape in the last, say, 18 months. You know, like the divorce of Sanzo, you know, like the home unions and Sands are going their own way.
Yeah.
And I think for us, it's exciting to go north. Like you mentioned, the Rainbow Nations Cup, I think that's a truncated version of pro rugby.
Yeah.
And that's just maybe to see how it'll work. You know, like also obviously as a filler, because the European season and our traditional seasons run differently. So where Europe runs from the 1st of July till the end of June, we generally run January to November or end of October. So I think that Rainbow Cup will just align us from a season point of view to take us to June, where we can then fall into a fully-fledged European season. So, yeah, we're very excited about that. Obviously, it'll have to come with a little bit of change, you know, innovation probably more than change, because, you know, if you play in Limerick or in Edinburgh in February, it's vastly different to playing in sure. Loftus in Newland in February. You know? So
sure.
you can't have the same game plan. But from that point of view, yeah, it is exciting. We really look forward to it. I think from a logistics point of view and a travel point of view, it'll be a lot easier for us to be competitive in those Northern Hemisphere competitions than it was, you know, going to Australia, New Zealand 4 weeks, then heading over to Japan for a weekend and going to Buenos Aires for another weekend, you know, which is a bit difficult.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it strikes me in all of this that Argentina are going to be the big losers and they're kind of in the middle of nowhere. But just, you know, you talk about going north. I hadn't realized Marco Mazzotti had a local sort of toti connection to the Sharks game. But the interest of America in rugby for me is intriguing. And you could see the shift in mindset the moment sevens rugby became an Olympic sport and the Americans suddenly sensed the gold medal, their game changed. I mean, they are, I think, sitting number three, or they were sitting third in the log on sevens, and they're going to win a gold medal, maybe not this next Olympics next year, but the one after that. So does this signal a bigger realization, Ed, in America that rugby is a sport which I think Americans would really relate to? They love physical conflict. They love the passion of the game. They get it, I think, instinctively. What's your feeling? Is there a bigger picture here?
Yeah, I think there's a few aspects to this. I think definitely America, with the amount of athletes they have, as soon as they get their pipeline right, I think they'll be a force in world rugby on 15s and 7s. And then also, I think, you know, commercially, rugby globally is undervalued. You know, if you look at the valuation that was put to the All Blacks recently by Silver Lake. You know, it's $2 billion, I think, and they were talking about a 50% share in that. You know, CBC has gone into the Premier League rugby, the Six Nations, you know, and so I think there's a huge upside. You know, we haven't gone that way yet. We haven't sold private equity at a federation level. But I think, you know, there's opportunity for any investor, I think, potential that if you come in at the right time and you position yourself correctly, you know, there's potential upside.
Yeah. Just I'm going to pose one last question. I'm going to leave the doctor wrap it. And it's the big question for me. You know, I was peaking this year, I was going to take my grandson Ethan to King's Park, and it was like kind of closure for me, and I have got my tickets for the Lions versus the Sharks. What's the sort of feed on that? What's the feeling? Was it really just at this stage we just got our fingers crossed? How's the Lions tour looking as an option, or do you think we will end up unfortunately having to go north to play that as well?
Yeah, there's, I think, Gordon, it is a bit of a it's a bit of a tough topic, because, you know, like, you don't want to get emotional about a rugby tour when there's people dying all over the world through this pandemic. But you're right, you know, like, the British Lions is a once every 12 year event that comes to our shores, you know, and we were all looking forward to it. So yeah, at the moment it doesn't look great just because of people in stadiums at that time, you know. So I think there are different options that are getting tabled, you know, maybe the option of playing it in Europe. You know, I think that will be, it'll be sad for South Africans, you know, because as you said, like, this is a highlight. I think the test matches sold out within 3 days, you know, and that, yeah, those test match tickets are 400% oversubscribed.
Yeah.
So there's a huge demand, you know, there was a huge following, and the economic impact of such an event in South Africa is also big. But if we don't go to Europe to play, there's also an option apparently getting table of moving it out till February 2022, but, you know, that affects the international calendar and the Six Nations. So there's a lot of logistics around that. We will probably have more of a clear view towards the end of March, as the timelines they've given us, or end of February probably.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess most people, all people, all rugby fans hope that it does come about. But you make the point, Ed, there are bigger issues at play. And so hopefully, you know, the pandemic gets a little bit more under control by then, and the Lions can tour. Just to wrap up, I mean, onto more immediate stuff. I mean, first things before I forget, good luck for the weekend's semi-final, Curry Cup. Hopefully you guys go down there and play yourself into the final. So that's the first thing. And then, you know, just in closing again, you know, from our side, Gordon and I, the stated objective that you've made public is to make the Sharks a global force of world rugby, the global expansion. You know, we can only wish you well as a sport and entertainment merge in sportainment and the whole global influence of the Americans. So again, from our side, thanks so much for your time. I mean, we could have chatted for much longer, as we always can, but we don't want to keep you away from running the franchise. And thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Gordon. Thanks, Doug. And yeah, as always, it's a pleasure, and anytime I'm here, and good luck and be safe, and we'll be in touch soon.
We'll catch up for a lemonade at the park sometime.
Definitely, that'll be good.
Thanks, Ed. Cheers, man.
Cheers. Bye. Take care. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us again today. Any questions, please send them through on the various social media platforms, and we look forward to engaging with you in the weeks ahead. Thanks for your time. Ciao.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.